Well, hello once again, and welcome to the Creative Writing Life podcast. I'm Paul Zeidman. My co-host Justin Sloan, unfortunately unable to attend today, which is a shame because he would be a great addition to this, but we're going to have a fantastic time. I'm happy to welcome to the show Tyler Snur. Not only is he an author but and a screenwriter, he is also an entrepreneur in his own words. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. We're happy to have you here too. And so for viewers and listeners who are used to the show and regular people who tune in, we always start things off talking about things we may have read or watched lately, and you know, whether we liked them or we hated them. And I will start to give Tyler time to think about it. So I finished watching Blue Eye Samurai on Netflix. Loved it. I cannot wait to see what they do with the second season. It was just phenomenal all around. And just I was going through the homepage on Max and decided what have I not seen that I think I should. And so I watched 42, which is the Jackie Robinson story with the late Chadwick Boseman and Harrison Ford in a much bigger role than I expected as Branch Rickey, the guy who owned the Brooklyn Dodgers at the time and brought Rap Robinson up into the major leagues. It was a well-done story, and I think they really captured the essence of the time. I really enjoyed it. And oh, and I just started watching Masters of the Air on Apple TV. I've already seen Band of Brothers and The Pacific, so this is pretty much the one you have to watch after those because I think it's the same vibe, same presentation, and great acting and great material all around. So highly recommend all three of those. Tyler, what about you?
So I recently started watching Lost on Disney.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that show?
I was around when it first aired on broadcast television. That's how old I am.
Okay, so I'm watching the binge version now, where you can watch episode
Sure.
after episode. It's really good. I'm about halfway through season one, I think. So still
Okay.
early, but hooked. So good.
Yeah, I remember watching the pilot, and they set up so many things that there's eventual payoffs all along the line, and then things when you get to the end of season one, I'm not going to spoil anything, but when you get to the end of season one, so many things you would not see coming, and so many things that they set up that they're just making it that much bigger a world for you to fall into. So I think you'll enjoy it, but yeah, don't wrap up too much in, or don't watch of it all at once. It'll just blow your mind because
Oh yeah, in pieces, pace it out.
yes, definitely paced. Yeah, one or two a day. That's probably the best way to do it. Okay. So Tyler, so let us talk about you. This is a fascinating thing. You self-published a YA fantasy novel when you were in high school. And you're
Yes.
still in school now. So tell us about you. Like, were you one of those kids who like you just were writing all the time, or you just kind of like, oh, I don't mind reading and writing, but you know, then you decided I'm gonna give it a try and thought, hey, I actually like this. I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah, so I've been writing for as long as I can remember. Well, first I was reading, and then that led into a love of writing. Probably around the age of 7, 8, that's when it really started for me. And then this story in particular, the Jewels of Fate series, that started around the age of 12, 13. I don't exactly remember when, but it was quite a few years before I published the first book that I was actually, still writing and like working on that world building and all of that. So this has been a super long project for me. That's been most of my life up until this point.
Wow. So what was the inspiration for the Jewels of Fate? And also if you kind of let people know, like, you know, what kind of story is it about?
Oh, for sure. So the Jewels of Fate is the first book in my series, followed by the Sword of Sorrenth. Followed by the next book in the trilogy, which will come out next year, to be named as well. No name yet. But it's a kids' teen fantasy, very similar to Percy Jackson. For fans of Percy Jackson or Harry Potter, it's about a boy. He finds out his whole life's a lie. When teenagers start disappearing all over New York, he learns that magic is real and there's a world called Echinacea that's full of it. Not only that, but he gets summoned by their queen to carry out a secret request.
Oh, okay. I thought you were leading up to something else. So, okay. So, what was kind of like what inspired you to write it? Did you just think, hey, you know, I like Percy Jackson, I like Harry Potter, I want to kind of put my own take on it.
Yeah, I'd say it's a blend of all of those things. There's no like one specific thing that I feel like inspired me. It's a mix of all of those books that I read growing up, and a lot of others too that I didn't name. I have two huge bookshelves in my room, so like lots and lots of books, lots of stories that I read growing up. But then it slowly evolved from like a love of reading those stories to, the desire to just try and write one myself and see how it goes.
Okay, so you started the Jewels of Fate. You said you were about like 12, 13-ish or so. So how long did it take you to actually write it? And I believe you self-published it. So how long did it take you to write it, but also like how was your process for publishing it?
So it took 5 years to write.
Wow.
And in the beginning stages, it was actually just a short story. I wrote it for fun one day when I was bored in school. I think it was during like a creative writing class in English or something like that. And I just started writing. And then, the story in this world took form. And the more I got serious about it, the more it kind of stretched out and expanded into a novel. And as I got older and kind of matured in my writing, I rewrote parts and I fixed the ending and then I fixed the beginning and I rewrote the middle. So over time, it slowly evolved into the book that it is today.
Okay. So I do have to ask, because a lot of writers go through this. Do you look at the stuff you started, like when you were first starting out, and then compared to how it is now, do you think, oh my God, what was I thinking? Or like, who is this moron? What were they thinking trying to write like this?
I refuse to do it. I have the file somewhere on my computer of like 12-year-old me writing the story, and I refuse to go back and look. I just,
Oh,
it's
wow.
no, too painful.
Well, I will say this, that you should try to like force yourself to do that, because when you look to see how you were when you were first starting out compared to how far you've progressed and what kind of writer you are now, it's almost like an ego boost, because you're like, wow, I did not know what I was
True.
doing. And then, but you look at it and think, well, I've come so far, and then you should be proud of yourself for being able to make those adjustments and learn as you go along.
Oh, I didn't think of it that way. Maybe I will go back and look now.
Yeah, well, but also feel free to be like, oh my God, what was I thinking? So we mentioned about self-publishing. So what was your process for that? Did you go to editors and say, hey, can you help me get this made? Or did you just kind of like, I'm going to do it all myself?
Yeah, so at the time it was about to be published, I was actually in an entrepreneurship program for high school students. So that summer, when I launched the Jewels of Fate, I was in a program called the Summer Company. And what they do is they give grants to high school students to start their own business. So my business was writing and publishing a novel. So all of my expenses from that grant went towards the publishing process. So things like the launch or things like printing,
And
business
cover
cards
design.
and postcards, cover design. Yep, that too. So things like that. So I had a lot of help, thankfully. I didn't do it all myself. So my mom has a background in editing, so she did a few rounds of edits. And then I have a friend from elementary school actually, who is such a talented artist. So she did the cover design, and it turned out phenomenal. I kind of found the people. But I had a lot of help from friends and family, which I was very grateful for.
And that is a great example that a lot of writers go into a project thinking, well, I don't have any resources, I don't have anything that can help me. But kind of if you take a step back and think like, well, who do I know that might be able to help me with this? I mean, you got your mom as the editor, you got your friend the artist, and you got the grant. Man, that's fantastic. But that is really proof that there's nothing really stopping you from accomplishing it. It might be a few hurdles and obstacles along the way, but if you can find a way through it, it might not be what you originally expected, but you're able to get to that goal that you set for yourself.
Exactly.
That is fantastic. That's great stuff. So one of the things you mentioned is that so this I can address this from the screenwriting point of view, because you talk about like why the first page and the first chapter of a book are important, because I guess you want to, I guess, set the tone and establish the world of your story. And if you don't have that, I guess, what, solid enough, that you're not going to be able to hold on to your reader's interest. So can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. So I call it the reader's roadmap, and it applies to both novels or screenplays. And what it means is the first page, and even the first line is so crucial because there is a pathway that readers go through when they are making the decision to buy a new book. And so you've heard the saying, don't judge a book by its cover. Well, everyone judges the book by its cover and the first page and the
Sure.
first line. So it starts with the store. Like everyone has a store that they go to buy books. And then it goes, then the next level is the genre. So for me, I wouldn't go to chapters and I would not go to the romance section because I don't read romance, but I would go to the fantasy section. So that's the next
Okay.
level. And then cover is the third level. Is it eye-catching? Will it pull you in? And then if they pick up the book to look at the cover, then they'll probably flip it on, like to read the synopsis on the back, which is the fourth level. And then if they like the synopsis, then it's the first line. And then the first page, which is level six. And then level seven is the first chapter. And then if you can make it to level eight, that's the decision to buy the book or not.
Oh my God, I love how complex this is getting the more you go on. It's not
Yeah.
just like, hey, this looks interesting. It's like you have a like almost a step-by-step process of how to
Yeah.
evaluate this. How did you come up with this? Is this like from your own experience, like what you would go through when you were trying to get a book? Would you go to the bookstore and say, okay, what looks good? Oh, that's an interesting cover, and or maybe the title grabs you. Is that how you start, or what was it? How was it for you?
Yeah, so I went through that so many times when, I'm looking for my own books at the store when I go book shopping. And you don't usually, think about it so compartmentalized like that, like step by step. It's more subconscious and psychological the way we're just naturally drawn to these, steps in the process. So after so many times of going through it myself and talking with other readers who feel the same way, and hearing things like how so important the cover is, I really started to analyze like why do readers buy certain books and not others? Like what is that process?
And I guess you probably got a very wide variety of reasons why people would buy something like, oh, it's got a female main character. I don't like those. Or, oh, the title sounds dumb, that sort of thing.
And it's still up to your opinion, and sometimes, one author's book might appeal, like the back synopsis might appeal to one person but not another. So it's also like based on your own taste too, but subconsciously, I feel like every reader goes through that when looking for a new book.
Okay, so let me kind of throw out a scenario for you. So you go to the bookstore and you see a book. Hey, that's an appealing cover. I like the title. You pick it up. Oh, the synopsis on the back, it's okay. It's kind of like so-so. What would make you want to keep going? Or would you kind of like, is it just a mood, or you just kind of like a vibe you get? So, okay, they've been able to hold on to me so far. But they kind of lost me with the synopsis, and maybe you skim the first page. Oh, it's okay. It's not great, but it's not terrible. I mean, so what are the criteria for to keep going, like keep checking all of those things on your list?
That's hard to answer because
Sure.
it would be based on everyone's own opinion and personal taste.
Okay.
I mean, I can try answering from my point of view, but that might be different from someone else's. For
Well, it's
me,
you'll say it's
the
your roadmap. So let's start.
okay.
Let's use you as an example. So
Okay.
book shopper Tyler.
So for me, the synopsis would be the make or break for me.
Okay.
If the cover is so-so, but the synopsis is really solid, I'll keep going. But if the cover, even if the cover grabs me and then I pick up the book and I read it and it's not like the synopsis doesn't grip me, then I'll still put it down. So for others, it might be, the cover that is the make or break. So in that case, I'd probably put the book down.
Okay, so here's one that okay, so the title's okay, interesting title. The cover, not the best art. The synopsis sounds really good, but then you get in, and I mean, there's so many variables to this. It's blowing my mind as I talk about it. That you start reading, and what if it's a great first line and first page, but as you go through chapter one, it just kind of like, it kind of peters out, that it's kind of like it loses your interest. I mean, do you go through that evaluation at the bookstore, or do you take it home and start to read it and be like, oh my God, what a piece of trash this turned out to be?
No, I do it at the bookstore.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, I guess because for me, honestly, it's been a while since I've been to a bookstore, that if it's the cover is appealing, and I like the title, and I read the synopsis. Sounds interesting. I don't know anything about the authors, but that's just me. I don't really go as far to like start reading the content. I guess it has to be the idea or the concept of the story. That's what has to grab me. Now, if this sounds interesting, sure, I'll give it a try. And maybe half the time I'll take it home and I'll read it like, this was good. I loved it. I want to see what other things the author has written. Or I'll read it like, eh, you lost, because I remember being a book recommended to me at the bookstore once. And I started read, I took it home and I started reading. I was like, this is awful. I just did not like it. I didn't, and I don't understand why it didn't appeal to me, because it had great reviews. Maybe just the story wasn't working for me, or I didn't like the characters. Honestly, I don't remember, but that was a rare type of thing for me. Usually, if a book is recommended to me, or I'll grab it off the shelf and look at it, and I will read it and I will enjoy it because of all the things that you were talking about. So it's just interesting to hear that. I know it's different criteria for everybody, but I love the fact that you can go in and you have all of these, like this checklist that, okay, this is okay, this works, okay, this is kind of iffy. But then you get into it. And have you ever, this also raises the question, have you ever started reading a book like chapter one, this is great, and chapter two is where maybe it starts to go downhill? Or has there been a book where you start to read chapter one, this is really good, and then, oh my gosh, it gets better and better as it goes on?
Yeah, I've had both for sure. So it's, the reader's roadmap, it's not definite, right? Like you can go through it and then still not enjoy the book because of, chapter 13 or 14, even if the first chapter is good. So yeah, I've definitely had both. It's for me, it's rare that I don't finish a book. But sometimes I do. Like it starts out great and then it's just downhill and it gets to a point where like it's just not enjoyable for me to continue reading this anymore.
So, but you force yourself to finish it, or do you just kind of like just like start skimming pages?
99% of the time I finish it, like that 1% has to be like brutally horrible for me to put it down.
Okay, I like that. Okay, so let's turn this around and let's approach this from Tyler, the author's perspective. Okay, so you're putting your book together. So, okay, you've got your title. Okay, you come up with what you hope is a real catchy title, and you've got your cover design. So, how much effort do you put into the synopsis? Do you really want it to grab the reader and say, like, hey, this is a fantastic story, you have to read this? Like, do you spend a lot of time working on that? Do you just kind of like, ah, I can just, if you crank it out in a little bit and it's all set? Or do you like put as much effort into the synopsis for the back cover as you do into, say, outlining the story overall?
I would say not as much time as it takes me to outline because I'm a really long outliner. Like that process takes quite a while. But I for my first book, I remember spending like hours just figuring out the synopsis and the back cover. And it's only three little paragraphs, so it's not that much. I think it's maybe 300, 400 words total. But I spent so many hours on it just making sure that it was gripping and it was also accurate too, because the other thing is some stories I'll flip over the book and I'll read the back and it sounds fantastic and then none of what's on the back is in the book and then it's kind of like a letdown, or it's tweaked just enough that it like technically fits but it's not like what you expected or anticipated. So I really wanted to make sure that if readers chose to continue with my book based on the back cover and the synopsis that I would deliver that in the book.
Okay, I like that. I like that a lot. Okay, so you also raised a great point that you're a long outliner. And as any writer, screenwriter will tell you that your first chapter, your first act, that is really all about establishing the world of your protagonist, and also establishing what kind of character they are and their potential arc, and also establishing your antagonist. So for your books, so do you put a lot of that into the first chapter, or do you kind of like space it out a little bit, like chapters one, two, and three? Or do you just have chapter one is all about establishing the world of your protagonist, and the end of chapter one is like they're off on their adventure?
For my first book, it took about five or six chapters for the plot to get going, because there were certain things that needed to be set up in order for the plot to really take off. So what I did was most of those chapters were actually action or movement. Like it wasn't just exposition, but at the same time, it was leading up to the end of chapter five or six, I forget which, and then it really took off. So I kind of spaced it out a little bit in the beginning, but I tend to stay away from exposition, like chapters that are just backstory, 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 because I find that bores me in a book. So I feel like that would bore my readers sometimes.
Oh yeah, that definitely comes to be, especially if you're not enjoying the writing, then that's going to be evident in the writing, and the reader will not get as much enjoyment out of it as you want them to. I also want to ask you about your outlining process, because that is something we've talked about a lot here. Now, I know it's different for books, but we've had writers on, and it's kind of almost like an ongoing discussion that there are some writers who, like myself, I outline like crazy before I start on a script, that I want to make sure the outline and the story are as rock solid as possible. And then there are also writers who come on, which it blows my mind that they can say this, that, oh, I don't really have an outline. I just, see where the characters take me. So, but as you were saying that, it sounds as a long outliner that you are very meticulous with how you're plotting out the story. And I'm sure you probably have like, okay, this character, this is what's going to happen to them. And here's what's going to happen to my protagonist. And here's some things I can throw in the way to really mess up their goal or mess up their journey trying to get to their goal. So, what is your outlining process like? Do you start with, here's an idea, here's what I want the characters to be, I know how it's going to end. I mean, what is it for you?
So my outlining process is first I look at the characters because I have two main characters in the first book, Chuck and Kayleen. So Chuck is from New York, so he's from our world, and he gets introduced to Echinacea, which is the fictional world that the book is set in. Kayleen is the princess of Echinacea, so she already lives there. So starting with these two characters, like they're both from different worlds and have different experiences right off the bat. So when I was outlining, I really had to figure out where's a logical place to start Chuck's story, where's a logical place to start Kayleen's story, and where's a logical place to bridge the two and have them meet. So it actually took a while for Chuck and Kayleen to meet, just because Chuck had to learn about Echinacea, learn what was at stake, and then, move over to this new fictional world that he knows nothing about. And on the other hand, Kayleen has to learn what's at stake, in her own kingdom, in her own backyard, and how she can get involved. And then the two meet.
Okay, and that's all in the first book. Because I was going to ask, so when you wrote the first book, did you already have an idea of what books for, like a sequel? Did you already know what was going to happen in a second book or second, third, and fourth books?
Yeah, so I knew I wanted to write a trilogy. I didn't know what the future books would look like. So when I outlined book one, I knew, what the start of book one would be, what the middle of book one would be, what the end of book one would be. But past that, I didn't know anything about book two until I finished writing book one. And then I started, slowly outlining book two. And then when I worked on book two, I did the same for book three.
I have found that sometimes if I'm working on a story, that sometimes almost like my subconscious plants clues that future me can use to revise it, or that I can use later on in the story. Was it sort of like that for you? Like when you were planning out book two, you were like, okay, I'm trying to figure this out. Did you go through book one like almost with a fine-tooth comb? Like, okay, what do I have in here that I can, this is a setup for now that I can also use later?
I wouldn't say off the top of my head, I don't know if there was one from book one.
Okay.
However, the scene I'm writing for book three right now is directly based off of one of those like seeds that I planted in book two, that I didn't even realize was there until I finished book two. And then it leads to this big payoff in book three. So that's one of the things that I'm super excited about when I release book three is, this huge plot twist that like can be set up in book two, but I didn't even realize it until I was finished. So I think that has to do with more of, maturing as a writer. Like I was writing the first book 5 years ago, so my craft was a little not where it is now. So I feel like I have more capability to, weave storylines together like that.
Oh, that's great. That's definitely the sign of improvement and honing one's craft. That I was going to ask you, so like, how is the writing for you now compared to like, when you were, 15, 16, that You said you're able to develop and see how far you've come. So when you were writing then, was it just kind of like, oh, I just want to get this done, but now it's a lot more, there's a lot more skill required for it. I mean, how do you see those formative years as like helping you get to where you are today?
I would say, well, even back then, like I took the first book very seriously, and when I released it, I wanted to make sure that when it was published, as of this moment at age 17, this is the best I could possibly do with this, and I was very proud of what I had come up with, but yeah, I think it's only natural that the older you get or the more experience you get, the better you get. It's just natural progression. So I definitely feel that in terms of how it's different, I find it's tough to keep the same tone. So it's it's a kid's book for teens, 12 to 18. So there's a certain tone that comes with that. And I found that as I got older and I started reading other books, especially more YA, it became tougher to keep the more mature tone or more mature voices out of my books, to keep them fairly consistent, while at the same time incorporating different techniques and learning new writing skills.
Okay. So I also wanted to ask you, okay, so you said that your mother pretty much was your editor.
Yes.
So when you first handed her the material, was she really brutal with her editing? Did she have a lot of suggestions that you had to go back and make a lot of changes? Or did she say, okay, this works, this doesn't, okay, I don't understand what this character's motivation? Was it a lot of was she able to leave the mom aspect out of it?
I think so. I think so. She was very honest with, this doesn't make sense. You're kind of rambling here.
Okay.
Why is this character here? This plot point like makes no logical sense, even in a fictional fantasy world. So, she told me straight what needed to change and what needed to improve, which I was grateful for.
Okay, did that require like a lot of rewriting, or was it just more like, okay, you need to kind of tweak this here, and if you got rid of this, that would really set this thing up better, like all that sort of helpful advice?
I would say the beginning needed the most work. I think I rewrote, the first five or six chapters the most, and that's, the part of the book that I got the most feedback on from my mom. The middle of the story and the end of the story was, fairly solid. It needed a few minor tweaks. It was more like consistency and, does this make sense? Why is this character saying this? Which, that's in the film world too, like, making continuity. That's the word I'm looking for, continuity.
Sure. So I also wanted to ask, so when you start on a story, one of the key things, do you know how it's going to end?
Yes, because I outlined.
Oh, okay, that's true. That's true. And also, excuse me. When you're developing the story, do you kind of think, okay, this is where I need to go, but do you ever get inspired, or maybe a new idea pops and you're like, oh wait, if I take this in an entirely different direction, but it'll still get me to that end point, but it's totally what I was not expecting to do when I started. Have you ever gone through that, and like, do you run with that? Do you like kind of like, okay, which one do I like better? Which one works better for the story? I mean, what's your process for working through that?
Yeah, so that happened in my second book, The Sword of Sorinth, where I pretty much rewrote the whole second half. It was completely different from my outline. And yeah, I just ran with it. And like you said, like I knew I had the start of the story and I knew where I wanted the end of the story to be. So it was just that middle gap that needed fixing or improvisation. So I just rewrote it and I still ended up at the same like end point. But the middle completely changed.
And I assume you were much happier with how it worked out
Oh,
compared.
absolutely.
Okay, that's good. That always helps. So I also wanted to ask you, so like when you're not actually writing, that you're talking about writing, that you've mentioned that you do author presentations at schools. Now, what do you, I mean, I'm going to assume you talk about your reader's roadmap, but do you also talk to students about writing and pursuing that, or just kind of like, hey, you don't have to make a living at this, but if you want to write, just sit down and write. Wait, what kind of things do you talk about at those?
Yeah, so I have a variety of author presentations based on who I'm speaking to. So I have a grade 3-4 presentation about the importance of reading and kind of like going through the books that I read growing up and how they impacted my writing. I have a presentation for like grade 6-7 about starting your first job. And I kind of went through, my first few jobs, part-time jobs, and how they helped me in, my entrepreneur writing business. And then in the high school, I have a presentation specific about building fantasy worlds. So I talk a lot about what goes into a fantasy world, how to make it, engaging for readers. I talk a lot about, keep the exposition out of it as much as possible. And then I have a general presentation just about kind of how I got into this, my advice for writers and kind of how you can write a novel when you feel like maybe you're working a full-time job or you're in school. And I kind of go through my process of how I wrote my first novel when I was in high school and how I wrote my second novel when I was in university.
Okay, I have to ask. So, giving all of these presentations, is there a question that you might have been asked during the Q&A portion that just really stuck with you?
I get a lot of different questions. I love answering questions because I never know where they're coming from. So it always keeps me on my toes. I would say the one question I get is
This
do
is
I
the one you get the most, maybe?
the one I get the most? How old was I when I published my first book? That's the one I get the most. Or no, how old I was when I started writing. Because if you go on my website, it says that I was 17 when I published my first novel, but I don't actually, advertise anywhere when I started writing The Jewels of Fate, which was 12, 13. So I get that question a lot.
What is the reaction to that? Do a lot of kids are like, wow, or like, oh my gosh, you actually sat down and worked on this for that long?
I get two different responses to that. The
Okay.
one is I got kids who say, I could never sit that long. Like, wow, that's such a long time. Or I could never stick with anything that long. And then the other question or the other response I get is, that's my age. I'm 12. I'm 13. That's so cool.
And is that like, I'm sorry, it's been a while since my daughter was in school. Is that like the third and fourth grade ages?
12, 13 would be grade 6.
Okay, so you said like grades 3 and 4. So what do you talk about with them? I'm just curious. It's such a young audience.
Yeah, so I for the grades 3 and 4, I mostly talk about reading and then I touch a little bit on writing because at that age, they're just getting into reading. It was only a couple of years ago that they might have actually learned how to read,
Sure.
and they're starting on, those mini chapter books like Junie B. Jones or the Magic Treehouse series. And then slowly, some of them are getting into, the bigger chapter books. So that they're at that age where like reading is this new thing that they're experiencing. So I really talk about like why it's important, what it can do for you. And I kind of plant the seeds of if you really like reading, you might also like writing. And kind of, bridge the gap, like how did reading help me in my writing journey?
Okay. I do have to ask, so you mentioned a couple of book series there. So for the grades 3 and 4, like what books do you recommend books, or do you just say, oh, if you like to read, just go and read?
I have a few recommendations. So I always recommend Magic Treehouse and Junie B. Jones.
Okay.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid, that's another one I recommend.
I'm assuming that's very popular.
Oh yes, very popular. Captain Underpants, I recommend that one too.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a few. Those are the four big ones that I always tend to talk about because they're the ones that I read at that age.
And I imagine a lot of the kids are like, "Oh, I've read that too."
Yeah.
Oh, that is awesome. Okay, so not only do you talk to kids in school, that is, it says you've spoken at conferences and summits. I mean, I'm going to guess that one of you talk about being a YA author, or maybe also a fantasy author. I mean, I miss you. Do you talk about those? But are there other topics that you address when you do these kinds of speeches?
Yeah, for sure. It depends on the conference. My most popular topic for the conferences is how to write a novel when you're in school or when you're in a full-time job, because that's what a lot of aspiring writers, like that's the biggest question on their minds. How can I write a novel when I've got all these other, demands on my time, even though I really want this to happen? So, how can I make it happen? So I talk about, like I said, my experience in high school and my experience in university, and kind of how I had to juggle everything, but still, kept focused on the writing, and the business side of writing too.
Okay, so I mean, what? So if you can just kind of give a few thumbnails from that, I mean, because everybody who wants to be a writer, they need to find the time to write. I imagine that's a big part of it. Do you say, like establish a realistic goal? I mean, that's what I do for screenwriting. Like I try to do 3 pages a day. And if I do a little more, great. If I'm just able to get to 3 pages, like okay, mission accomplished. I mean, what are some of the tips that you give to people who, for your how to write a novel speech?
Yeah, for sure. So the first step is always look at your schedule because that is what's different from everyone else. So someone might have less free time than you, someone might have more free time than you. It's all based on your own schedule and your own life. So the first step is to really analyze, what do I have going on in my own life? Am I, full-time employee, kids, relatives, maybe you are in school, like whatever it is, like what does your life look like? And then from there, the next step is to figure out, based on that, what is the most logical time for me to spend either writing or working on the business. And the cool thing about this presentation is I gear it towards writers, but the information is applicable to aspiring entrepreneurs, maybe athletes, anyone who wants to accomplish something they've always dreamed of within the constraints of their already existing responsibilities and priorities. So after figuring out, when is the best day to do it, whether maybe it's Wednesday nights from 8 o'clock at night to 10 o'clock at night. Then from there, you make a plan. So for the next 12 weeks, every Wednesday from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock at night, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write. And then you figure out with that time frame, what is realistically possible? Is it a whole first draft? Is it a few chapters? Is it a page a night? Like what is realistically possible for you? And then the next step is just execution. And then I have a few strategies for how to execute effectively and not get derailed from that. So things like telling friends and family, hey, this is my time from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock at night. I'm going to be doing this. Or removing the obstacles, just making it easier for yourself to commit to that. So maybe, I don't know, rewarding yourself with a bowl of ice cream at the end of those 2 hours. If you write 3 pages of a screenplay, in 2 hours, you get a bowl of ice cream, that kind of thing.
Okay, that sounds like a worthy goal for me. We usually end the show by like asking our guests like advice for newer writers, but that's pretty much the whole show today has been your advice for newer writers because you talked about your experience, but also things that you've talked about to students and people at conferences and just kind of like your whole process of getting stuff done. And it's been really helpful and very educational. I can see why you're so in demand for wanting people to hear about what you have to say. So Tyler, where can people find out more about you online?
Yeah, for sure. So my website is snurstories.com, SNURE, and then stories.com. And there you can find more information about my books. I also have a personality quiz that will tell you what character you are in my books.
Okay.
So that's on my website as well. I have a blog there. So most of my information is on my website. You can also follow me on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all of that.
Is it Snur Stories on all of those as well?
Yes, my
Okay.
handle is also Snur
And we do
Stories.
have to ask, are your books available on Amazon or can they only get them through your site?
Nope, they're available on Amazon. I mean, the link is on my site,
Ah,
but
okay.
it'll take you to the Amazon page.
Okay, fantastic. So Snur Stories, Snure Stories.com. Tyler Snur, author, screenwriter, entrepreneur, educator. Thank you so much. This has been fantastic stuff and really, really helpful. I mean, as I said, Justin's more of the YA expert, so this was all kind of new territory for me, and I love hearing about it, and I love hearing about each writer's process of how they get to where they've got to and how they do what they do. This has just been fascinating stuff. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Okay, so that is Tyler Snur of snurstories.com. I will give Justin his plug. He's on Amazon for Justin Sloan Books, all of his material. And you can check out my stuff, my screenwriting blog, Maximum Z at maximumz.blog. I'm on Twitter, because I'm not calling it that other thing, at maximum_z. I'm also on Instagram at Pez Screenwriting, PEZ Screenwriting. Yes, those are my initials. Like I said, I will say bye for Justin and thank you to Tyler. This is Paul, and this has been the Creative Writing Life podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and most importantly, go write something.